Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by Pete Zayas, he of Kuzma following fame, the only person on the face of the planet. He plays with LeBron James and Anthony Davis, and the person that he follows on Twitter is none other than Mr. Do you want me to start? Like, do I have to start calling you Mr. Film Room?
Mr. The Film Room. That works for me if you'd like to.
Mr. The Film Room? But there's
Mr.
no
the. Mr. The Film Room. Yeah.
Okay. Mr. The Film Room. So, like, do you enjoy being the father of all the Film Room accounts on Twitter? Like, was that not enough that you had to DM Kuz and be like, hey, man, can you just do me this one solid?
I have a great urge, right, to help mentor young men in their 20s, right? Help them reach higher level. Dude, I have no idea what the hell the Kuzma thing is. If you're listening, for some reason,
literally
Kuz is
minutes
following
before
one person.
We went, yeah,
yes,
minutes before we started recording, Pete gets a random at from somebody who says, "Hey, dude, you're the only person Kyle Kuzma is following." To which you told
me, and he's never followed me before. He's never followed me before, too, right? And now he's unfollowed apparently everybody else and only follows me. What does it mean? I don't know. I've never talked to him.
I want to.
I mean, aside from a scrum, right?
Yeah. I want to be like an athlete for one day, and just mess with people with my social media account. Random emojis.
Sure.
You know, following certain people. Like, did you know that? For example, KFC's Twitter account follows, what is it? It's 13 herbs and spices, right? That's like what goes into their ingredients. So it's like eight guys named Herb and the Spice Girls.
Nice.
So,
nice.
So like that's the kind of thing I would use my Twitter for. That's the proper use of Twitter. Today, all right. So we could go in a couple directions on this one. We could have another capitalist Anthony versus Comrade Pete conversation regarding the James Harden situation. We do have to preview. That's what we're going to start with. We're going to preview the preseason, which is kicking off by the time you guys are listening to this tonight.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk about that for sure. And then there are a couple options. Like I said, the whole James Harden situation I find fascinating just because I care deeply about the league itself. And the direction that it might be heading in. So that's something we could talk about. We had planned to do the LeBron James player preview thing, and Pete researched for it, though he was going to do that research anyway, so I don't feel that bad if we don't. So we'll just kind of see. We'll get a feel for the direction that this is all heading in. The Lakers are going to kick off their preseason tonight, by the time you guys are listening to this, against the Los Angeles Clippers and their newly extended postseason maestro Paul George. What do you think of the contract? Like, what do you think of the deal, everything that kind of goes into it? Is this the kind of thing that, like, if you were a Clipper fan, would you be celebrating right now?
Oof. So you asked me before the show, would I want to pay Paul George X amount of money at age 36?
I mean,
of course, the answer is
$48 million dollars at 20 in the 24-25 season.
Right. That said, if I were a Clipper fan, I would be. And the reason for that is he's an all-star caliber player who could have very well walked at the end of this season for nothing. Mm-hmm. And if nothing else, if Kawhi leaves, they've got a player who will have value, right? He will have that value to certain teams that if he's your probably third guy, if you can fit him in financially, like Paul George is a really good player. And so securing a guy like that, all jokes aside, that said, would I rather have AD on a max contract versus a Paul George? That's the difference, right?
Yeah.
But
in that season, that 24-25 season, AD will be 31, making $43 million and change. Paul George will be, like I said, 36 and making $48 million and change. It's not a giant difference if you're just looking at the raw numbers, but when you take it all into context, AD being, you know, 4 years younger and on a cheaper deal and, you know, potentially with Paul George, like, I still don't trust the guy in the postseason. I can't get myself to. Now, it's the kind of thing that we do this with a lot of players where we don't trust that player until we finally do. Right.
Right.
And,
until then.
Yeah. Yeah, and so it might well be that this upcoming postseason, George bucks the trend that we have seen in recent years with him, and misses the side of the backboard and hits the net on a shot that he absolutely needs to make in a game seven when he's wide open. Until then, though, I would be a little iffy about this contract. Now, it is the Clippers, and when you consider their team history and the culture surrounding them and the articles that we've already read about the culture last year, like the fact that despite all of that noise, George is still, at least right now, committed to the organization. But I would tell everybody to keep in mind that he was financially committed to an extension with OKC when he quietly asked for them to send him to the Clippers. So this doesn't mean anything in that form either until we find out that it is.
That's true. But for all parties involved, right? Like, that's a lot of money to secure on the player side. Excuse me. Oh,
it's a lot of money. I got choked up thinking about it too.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Forgive me. I was a little slow on the cough button there, my man. I apologize. But yeah, from the player perspective, that's a lot of money to get locked up. And then from the team perspective, you know, that can go in a bunch of different ways. So like you said, it doesn't necessarily mean a long-term marriage, but it makes sense for both sides.
Yeah, yeah. The, like we said a second ago, the Lakers and Clippers will be facing off Friday evening in their first preseason game of the season. LeBron James and Anthony Davis are not expected to play, according to Frank Vogel. So with that in mind, is there anything that you are particularly interested in watching for in that game? Or is it just like, you know what, let's just enjoy it for the fact that the Lakers are back on a basketball court that we can all watch?
For me, it's like seeing the progression in players' games. I don't know if you remember, but last season, Alex Caruso got a lot of, he was really bad in the preseason, and he got a lot of point guard touches where he was leading kind of those third quarter units in preseason games where none of the starters are out there. It's all like guys, half of the guys on the court are not going to be on the final roster. And then you got one guy who at the time was not part of the rotation, as we saw to start the season, but putting guys like Caruso in positions of getting touches, THT, I'm really excited about what he can do. It's more about like seeing who expanded their games and seeing the new guys, right? But even there, like Schroeder and Harrell, I feel like we'll get a little more familiarized with their game, but I don't think there's a lot to learn from veterans. It's more THT, Kaycock, mm-hmm. and then older McKinney. Guys that are not old, but like Caruso and Kuz, who are part of the rotation, key parts of the team, but hey, have they added anything to their game? It's only been 2 months, right? So mm-hmm. that not a whole lot of time, but kind of let's put them in more positions where, say, Kuz is that ball handler on pick and rolls. Like he has a little bit of talent for that. He hit Dwight on some rolls, like all of those things that are kind of the next step for a player, get him some in-game reps in preseason games. I think that's what I'm looking forward to the most. How about you?
I'm personally, one of the things that is really going to decide this rotation and what the Lakers are capable of and the options that Vogel is going to be able to go to over the course of the year are going to be kind of two and three player combinations. And that type of chemistry on a very foundational level is pretty easy to spot when you see it, right?
Yeah.
And that's kind of what I'll be really paying attention to, especially given that AD and LeBron aren't going to be out there on the court. Because like if you're going to have chemistry without, maybe less so without LeBron, because LeBron is going to be the foundation of a lot of guys' chemistry because he's going to have the ball so much. But like defensively, for example, or even offensively, if Marc Gasol and Dennis Schroeder have some chemistry out there, and you know, the obvious combination is Schroeder and Harrell, and see how they play together in the pick and roll and all of that stuff. Marc Gasol and Kuzma is another combination that I'm really excited about, just because he's going to have the ball.
Yeah,
he's going to have the ball, and Kuzma works so well in more of like a free flowing pickup type situation. That's where Gasol is so good at, I think, reading defenses and facilitating there and making Kuzma a better player. So just on a very simple level, that's basically what I'm going to be looking for. Some principal stuff you know, defensively, if we start to get some kind of idea with, you know, the ways that they guard pick and rolls and the ways that they choose to rotate in certain situations, like we might see some of that. It's still going to be very early on in the process. So it's going to be sloppy, even if you see it. But you know, more than anything, those combinations and to see who all is driving with whom, that's something that I really enjoy watching, you know, from the very first time that they step on the court together to the last time that they're out there together. It's yeah. One of those processes things that if you get to watch it from its birth to the final version of it, yeah. it's a really fun process to follow.
Last season was one of the best examples I can ever remember of exactly what you're talking about there, right? Like mm-hmm. when a team is really working together and rowing in the same direction, how good they can be. And I think that for as much as we like to kind of rightfully make fun of all of the people who are like, Lakers roster sucks around LeBron and AD. It was never as mm-hmm. bad as people said. We got probably close to the best case scenario because mm-hmm. everybody got along and that chemistry yep. and that working together. There's a version of that where they don't work so well together and it doesn't look the way that it did. So yeah, 100%. You can see that in the preseason is how connected is everybody. And so yeah, that's a great thing to look out for.
Yep. All right. Let's take a quick second here. I don't even want to get into like who's going to win the game or anything like that. It's the first preseason game. The Lakers are going to be extremely shorthanded, and they're probably going to be mostly shorthanded throughout, I would imagine, a lot of the preseason. So I'm not really sure, you know, beyond the stuff that you and I are talking about, some of that getting cleaned up over the course of the handful of games that they're going to be playing. But I'm definitely not going to care at all about wins and losses in this one. All right, let's take a quick second here. When we come back, I can't help myself. I have to talk to you about the Harden thing. And if we have time, we'll preview the LeBron James season and stuff like that. But the Harden thing to me, I've reached my breaking point. I can't do this anymore. So we'll talk about that on the other side of the break. Today's show is brought to you in part by Built Go. Look, the NBA season is upon us, and in the Irwin household, that means I am standing up for games that are starting at 9:30 my time, which means my daughter is waking up about 6 hours after that game is over or after my coverage of that game is over. And I'm just telling you right now, there are times during that day where I'm staring directly at a wall while my daughter is running around in circles with energy that I just will never, ever have ever again, unless I take a Built Go pack. And right now, you can head on over to builtgo.com and use the promo code LOCKED, and you're going to get 20% off your next order. One more time, that is builtgo.com. Use promo code LOCKED to save 20% off your next order of these incredible little ounce and a half packs that are just packed with a little bit of caffeine, some natural stimulants, some things that are going to allow that pick me up to just kind of gently let you down and not crash like you do with some other energy supplements. These things are incredible. I would not have been able to get to this point of the year without a little bit of help every so often. And that's how I look at the Built Go pack. So one more time, head on over to builtgo.com, use promo code LOCKED, and you'll get 20% off your next order. One more time, LOCKED at builtgo.com to save 20%. Builtgo.com, let's go. All right, I'm going to let you start and set a tone for where you reside in this whole Harden conversation. Him now trying to force himself out of Houston. That's it. The situation right now, you guys know about it. He's trying to get out of Houston. He now expanded his list of teams to include basically every East contender other than the Celtics, which is funny in and of its own right. but where do you stand on this one?
So there's two parts of it for me. On a, like, do I think it's kind of weak? Yeah. Like, they've tried to build a team around him, multiple different versions around mm-hmm. him in Houston, and it hasn't worked out. And so the idea of, like, I want to be traded to a contender is, like, as though he hasn't had that opportunity is Yeah, I think that's kind of weak. Mm-hmm. That said, I don't know if Houston still is a contender. They've been bought by a new owner, mm-hmm. of which that has had some...
Who supremely sucks.
And, I mean, if Harden felt that way, I don't think he'd be unjustified in feeling mm-hmm. like the Houston I was with isn't the Houston that I am with now or will... Like, it's not the same thing going forward. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? And that said, if you take the... Is it... Like the veracity of it, is it weak? Is it a, you know, defensible move? If you just take the morality out of it, this is what's happening around the league. Like there's that player empowerment that we always talk about is going to keep growing and it's going to keep showing itself in new ways. This is not a new way. I would argue that Brooklyn kind of their whole setup is a little more of the, I'm curious to see where this goes. Cause nobody's done this before, but the old, I got a couple of years left on my deal, but I don't want to be here anymore. And I'm one of the best players in the league and I want to force my way out. I've only seen it end one way. And that's with the player getting traded to a team of his choice in most instances. And that team hopefully getting back some assets, but not anywhere near, like you don't get equal value for a star of that caliber, right? I've got questions about Harden, about, you know, his, of what caliber star he is, but he is obviously a top 10 player, one of the best players in the game. And you just can't get equal value for that. So whether we like it or not, whether it's weak or not, like it is, this is part of the deal, but you're a little riled up. So I'll be sure to poke the bear as much as I can. What do you got to say on this?
I'll start with this. Of all of the trade demands and all of everything to come out, like I am mostly on board with a lot of the guys trying to get out of situations, like the AD one, for example. Now I'm biased, and I'm sure people listening who have heard me talk about AD or analyze this situation would say, well, yeah, he wound up with the Lakers. Of course, you like that more than this one. The thing that the difference to me is that AD didn't have nearly as much control over his tenure in New Orleans and was in a much worse situation for stretches of his time in New Orleans than Harden was. He also had one fewer year, potentially two fewer years on his contract by the time he was asking out of New Orleans. So they very mm-hmm. well could have just waited out the year and let him leave via free agency, you know, and Harden having multiple years on his deal. I'm not thrilled about that because it's like, at what point do we ask players to actually honor a contract? You know, like at what point do we, if you sign, so Paul George just signed his 4-year, potentially 5-year max deal, right? And if Kawhi leaves, is he immediately going to ask out of the Clippers after signing such a giant contract? And after both of those guys require the Clippers to gut themselves of every future asset to pair those guys together? I don't know that that's a particularly healthy league, you know? And the other thing too is, the notion of power over an organization, an earned power, you know, it's important that we point out that this is power or leverage that they have over their organizations because they earn it because they're stars. The notion of that power though, without any accountability is not likable. Like it's not, and I don't think it's a very healthy way to market the league. And we're seeing this league, you know, I hate the ratings call and I hate the interest in the league analysis because it's so hugely disingenuous more often than not. But if you're just asking me, if you were to tell me about a league where players can basically decide when and where they team up, and if they team up and it doesn't work out, they can never look in the mirror as to why things didn't work out, and then immediately just ask out of the situation after teams bend over backwards to try to get those guys to team up and create and cultivate the culture that those guys prefer, and then just peace out and screw over entire cities and fan bases seemingly every year we're seeing that. I just don't think that's a very likable league. I don't think that's a very marketable league. And that is my concern with this. That's like, if I'm looking at it from a standpoint of the entire league's health, I just don't think this is a direction that the NBA can, I don't think it's a very sustainable direction.
I totally understand that concern, and I agree to an extent. I think that it's unhealthy under our current framework and paradigm, right, of teams being the kind of centerpiece of what you market, right? It's like people become fans of teams, right? We're Laker fans. Teams are, people follow, you know, the laundry, the pieces of clothing. And with LeBron especially, I mean, every player's had stands, right? But LeBron is the first player that I can remember that of that superstar ilk that had fans that were like, I'm not a fan of any team. I'm a fan of this dude.
Yeah.
And I think that the
Dragonfly Jones, for example, is like the loudest LeBron stan out there. And he's
there are a lot
of incredible Twitter follow.
I think that's actually kind of, it's an interesting way to be a fan. Right. Mm-hmm. I like it in some way in that you're not beholden to the decisions of these ever changing owners, or like if you're a Rockets fan, right? Like you're, I know plenty of Rockets fans who are like,
but is that profitable though? Like, is that it league wide? Is that profitable if everybody is just focused on the player? I'm not sure it is.
Not under the current framework. It would mean a completely different change. Like, I don't know. I have some kind of wild opinions on where I think this is going and what the, I don't know if, I think this is like water finding its natural level. And that's was the point that I was making earlier in that, like, I agree with what you're saying that like from a, how we currently market the league, this is like, it's rough. I also want to point out like Harden's in the exact same position that Kobe was in from a contractual standpoint, completely different context in terms of his relationship with the owner. Him and Dr. Buss could get real with each other and hash some shit out.
Right.
Right. And in a way that Fertitta and Harden probably can't. But I agree with you from the standpoint that this going more and more in this direction is harder. It's a different way to market. You're going to have to market the players. You're going to have to look at it more through that lens than through individual teams. But under the current structure, you've got the owners on one side of the equation and the players on the other. And the players are making a move in a lot of ways. I think in a lot of, to a large extent, this is a product of some of the owners' decisions. We have a new collective bargaining agreement about every 10 years, and it's to fix two things. Almost always two things are the main issues. The players have too much power. We don't want to encourage them to, we want to be able to have small markets be able to keep their stars and have some degree of parity around the league of these 30 teams in an environment where, like, of course, LA is more appealing than one of the small market environments. I would argue, though, that that is because in 1999, you put a cap on what the max player could make. And so, on a day where we get Paul George extending for max money, we got LeBron and AD signing their extensions. When Giannis knows exactly what he's going to make on a supermax, or any player knows exactly what they're going to make on their next extension, even if it's a little better in their home market, they're deciding on other factors. You have enhanced the reason to decide on other factors when the money is going to be the same nonetheless. So I would argue if the owners really don't like this, get rid of the max salary idea and offer open and make the player choose between, and I'm talking the star level guys, like what would Harden get on the open market? 50 a year, maybe?
Yeah.
And you can't keep the regular cap the same and then make that player choose between that or the $35 million a year. That's a big difference in money, right? Because you can't have too many of those guys on the team if guys can be offered whatever they want. Now, there's reasons for the Players Association not to go with it, but I don't know, man, this comes...
There goes the middle class.
There goes the middle class, exactly. So there's a lot of different pressures on this, and a lot of people with valid concerns, but I would argue that this is a function of the rules. The contracts are shorter, right? If you could sign in baseball, how many years did Mookie Betts just sign for?
I think it was like 12.
12 or 13, something like that.
Something insane, yeah.
If James Harden was on year three of a 12-year contract,
would he sign a 12-year contract?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. In basketball, like, I think that that type of security in baseball careers tend to be longer, mm-hmm. right? If you make it there. Although, yeah, the pay structure is totally different. Anyway, I've been rambling already to this point, but I think it's a problem of their own making in a lot of ways.
I agree. I want to take a quick second. I'll come back and I want to talk a little bit more about the max issue behind it. And I also think like this is a cultural shift. Like this is a cultural paradigm shift where a lot of people, a lot of fans of these teams and fans of these players have realized, wait, I'm also an employee. I'm not management. Why would I root for management? And I think that has played a really big role mm-hmm. in this entire conversation and the way that we go about it. Like I was asked to listen to Simmons by some of my friends and he made the point where basically like in past years and past iterations of the league, Harden would be getting ripped up and down by the press. And I'm not saying that that's like what we should be doing. I think mm-hmm. we should be criticizing it a little bit more than we are, you know, and we should be calling out aspects of it that more than we actually are. But it's also like, I think it's mostly healthy that for the most part, we've all realized, wait a sec, I have way more in common with the player than I do with the owner. Mm-hmm. Why would I side with owners over on any of this stuff? So I want to take a quick second. We'll talk about that a little more. Of it too, you know, we were talking about Kyrie previously, the last time you and I had a conversation like this, we were talking about Kyrie Irving and how he's a pretty bad messenger for the stuff that he's trying to say. And, you know, when it comes to Harden, I think he's another like almost worst example of a messenger.
Sure.
Right. And, sure. And also like, you know, to further tie those two guys together again, I can't help but look at this stuff and look at the packaging because that's something that I have some expertise in. But because we haven't heard from Harden hardly at all, and because we haven't heard, we haven't heard from Harden. The only thing that we've heard from Harden has been like him going out to strip clubs in Vegas rather than reporting to camp on time, right? That's the only bit of input that we've received from Harden. And that's where like, if you were to come out and say, show me the number of stars who, if they could guide themselves out of a situation, would stick around for a new and shitty owner, a different general manager because that new shitty owner forced out the other guy, and a new and rookie coach because that new shitty owner forced out the other coach, right? I think if he was just to frame it that way and come out and say that stuff, I think a lot more people would be willing to accept it, but because he's gone about this with supreme immaturity, here we are talking about his immaturity and not like the basis of why he wants out in the first place. So with all things, the packaging really freaking matters. And he's really failed on packaging this in a way that gets anybody to relate to him because there are ways to relate. Like if all of a sudden, say David sells Locked On, the Locked On Network, right? And the new person comes in and says, Anthony, your show Locked On Lakers requires more structure, has to have a completely different tone. You cannot Agreed. Criticize the team because fans aren't going to want to listen to you criticize the team. Fans just want to hear what they want to hear and makes them feel good. Like that's a completely show from the one that I've been hosting for years. And at that point, I would probably say, peace out. Sure. I can't do this. Sure. Right.
Sure.
And if I was to explain it, and if I was to come out and say all those things as I leave this audience behind, I'm sure there are members of the audience who would say, okay, let's see where you go now, you know?
Right.
And, right. And I think for Harden, you know, had he at any point in this entire process come out and said any of those things, we'd be having a very different conversation right now.
We would be, but it's also the conversation we're still choosing to have rather than the conversation about the situation in Houston and why James Harden would be like, yeah, I'm good. Like even all of the, you know, previous years aside and all of that, like I could totally see why somebody wouldn't, in his situation, would want to go somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And, but the point that you made about like following a person rather than an institution is one of the big things that I see changing in a lot of different respects. And this is happening on the media side and on the basketball side, mm-hmm. right? Is that that people will follow somebody that they're a person that they're a fan of, and they don't have as much need for the institution that's behind that person mm-hmm. participates in as they used to, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. And so while everything you're saying is right, and the messaging and all of that is like, of course he could have done better. And I think that hurts him, right? From the perspective Absolutely. Of it probably alienates some of his fans, and like there's a way to handle it that would keep them like, yeah, I'm on board with you. Cause he's got, again, as with the Kyrie situation, I see where the player is coming from. Their reaction to that sentiment or that feeling, I don't agree with them in either instance, but I see where they're coming from. And so like, yeah, he could handle it better, but I do think that it's still our choice to talk about the handling of the problem rather than the underlying one.
Well, but like you also, so even if we are talking about the underlying problem itself, mm-hmm. Harden has been coddled at every step of his career in Houston. And yes, that's mm-hmm. something that they all do for all of these stars and stuff like that.
Sure.
But at some point, if you're going to be coddled like that, there should be a demand for results, right? And he no finals appearances. And last year, like he's had multiple future Hall of Famers as teammates, and all of whom walked away from the situation saying, yeah, I'm glad I'm not playing with that guy anymore. And mm-hmm. And like to a certain, and also by the way, like there are very tangible ways to explain why he struggles in the postseason, right? We just watched him.
Yeah.
I can't, like, yeah. There are no other stars in the history of basketball who care as obviously and as little as James Harden cares about the little things and doing the little things to win, right? Playing consistent defense, taking part as a decoy to generate gravity and make an impact when you don't have the ball, like stuff like that, where like that would legitimately help his teams. And the lack of success that he's talking about, and part of the reason why he wants to leave is this lack of success. Well, mm-hmm. you've taken part, you've been a central figure in that lack of success. And God forbid we ask for, like I said a second ago, any accountability whatsoever.
So in this dynamic, that is the accountability, is that when you flex your power and you use it in various ways, of which I support, this is to me the natural evolution of things, is that they're the least replaceable people in the entire ecosystem. Of course, they're going to have the most power. But the accountability is that like when everything's goes the way that you want it to, or when a lot goes your way and it doesn't work out, then people are going to look at you, and people are going to look at you as being one of the core reasons of that. And so the accountability is tied to reputation. Mm-hmm. And in a world in which brands and things like that matter, that's in a lot of ways the driving forces that are behind a lot of this dynamic. In that world, that matters. And so it might not be as, I don't think there's anything you can put in place. Like, what kind of accountability do you want, I guess, is my question. Like, what could it be if there were to be accountability that's reasonable that you think would hold up? Because I don't see it beyond damage to your reputation.
Well, I mean, accountability is, a lot of times accountability in this industry is decided by us. And that's why, like I talked about a second ago, the fact that he isn't getting as roundly criticized as he should be, in my opinion.
Like, so you want the media to roundly criticize him, and that would be sufficient accountability
because it can very quickly turn ugly.
You know? No, that's fine. I'm not trying to argue that point, right? Like, say it's to the exactly appropriate line of criticism that you want. Then what? Like what does that accomplish?
We're at a point where Pete, we're like a month away. If he leaves, right? If he leaves and Houston fans boo him, you're going to have people questioning on Twitter, why are you booing him? He made a choice for himself. Why are you booing him? And it's like, mm-hmm. that's how players get held accountable. Like, that's how fans show their outrage at how shitty he was and how shitty he treated the organization, his teammates, his coach, everybody. He's thrown everybody mm-hmm. under the bus. And mm-hmm. if he does get traded, I'm pulling for Miami just to see like him try to get the body fat thing with Pat Riley. Like, I'm really excited about that dynamic. But if he does get traded and he gets booed, we can't judge on that. Like, I think that's something that he frankly deserves. And it's not to say that I would go out there and boo. I'm not really a booer unless it's Paul Pierce. Like, I'm not really, you know, that kind of a fan. But if there are fans who feel that way and feel wronged because of the way that he's handled this and because of the way he's represented the organization even before right now and the lack of results that he is holding everybody else other than himself accountable for, like, boo away, man. Boo away. And if you're a local columnist and you want to write this stuff without getting ugly, because it can very quickly get ugly, write away, man. And
there's plenty of valid criticism.
Yeah. That's all I'm saying. And I think that's one way to hold him accountable. That's the closest thing to an actual way to hold him accountable.
And there are a good number of people. I don't know if it's to your liking, right? It's obviously not to your degree of liking, but there are people criticizing, and say it were to your liking. All of that's true, right? And the fans have every right to feel the way that they do for all of the reasons that you said. At the end of the day, so what? Mm-hmm. Right? Like, to what degree is that accountability at all?
He made it really, really well in his like morning newsletter this morning. And he said, if there's anything that we've learned in 2020, it's that public shame doesn't really work all that time.
No, not really. Like, people move on. Like, yeah. We don't really care that much. It is at the end of the day. And that's kind of the point, is at the end of the day, this is way more important in James Harden's life than any of ours. And including the Houston Rockets, right? Now, the Rockets, this is a significant thing for them, but the Rockets will continue and will probably come out of this situation with something to build off of, right? Whether that's James Harden or if he were to get traded. But this is James Harden's career. And I haven't disagreed with a single thing that you've said. At the end of the day, he's going to make some people a little bit upset for the 10 seconds that they actually really give a crap about it. Mm-hmm. And then they're going to move on with the rest of their lives. And he's willing to do that in exchange for getting what he wants. And that makes sense to me even if it's not defensible on, like, there's a lot of valid criticisms of it. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, it's a nuanced subject. It's not a black or white thing. I think this is the closest that we've gotten to where it's really easy to have more hardline stances on it because mm-hmm. of the central figure in this situation.
Sure. And how he's acted too. It's not just the person.
Right. That's exactly what I mean. Yeah, that's, you know, it's a little easier on this one to really fully call him out, not just for the way he's handling it, but also because of what we've seen leading up to this and how little he's holding himself accountable for the situation he so dearly wants to depart. Last thing on this that I really want to talk about is, you know, for whoever trades for him, like, let's say you're the Sixers or the Heat, Milwaukee, whatever. Would you have any hesitance to trade for the guy? Cause this is where I find myself the most in the minority, because like, people were mocking the Heat for not wanting to trade Tyler Hero for him. And to which I would say, like, Tyler Hero just got to a finals and was, as a rookie, a big part of why they got there. We know that he's bought into that culture. We know that, and by the way, if you trade for Harden, that takes you out of the Giannis running, right? Mm-hmm. And so, like, for me, if I were a fan of one of these teams or running one of these teams that might be trading for him, I'd be a lot more reticent to trade for James Harden than I think Twitter thinks I should be.
Yeah, I would trade for Harden if he would be my team's second best player, right? Mm. If there was somebody else on the team, so Miami, for example.
But is he willing to be that, though?
It does. So that's that's something you find out before you trade for him.
Like, that's right? Everything we've seen to this point says no.
That's right. Because all of your criticisms about defensively and his activity off of the ball and just the little things that come playoff time when it comes to wins and losses absolutely matter. All true. He's also arguably the best scorer in the NBA. Mm-hmm. That matters a lot. And the reason I say I would trade for him if he would be my second best player, but maybe not my best or third best, although you wouldn't have to twist my arm too hard if I'm Brooklyn to trade for him, even though it sounds insane. I'm intrigued on a basketball level. We could have that conversation the other
day. We want chaos theory. Like, let's go.
Yes,
ahead.
Absolutely. That's a whole nother branch of this tree. But yeah, if he's my best player, I think that all of those things become fatal flaws deep enough into the playoffs, right? If he's my second best player and there's somebody else who can, like, the off-ball stuff, I'd be curious to see, right? Like, he'd have to go into that situation knowing he's not the only guy. Yeah, that'd be the one thing, is if I had a conversation with him, if I'm looking to trade for him and I don't know if that's going to change, like if he doesn't walk into my situation, say like Miami, knowing that like that's Jimmy's team. I mean, yeah. I know he's only been there Jimmy a year, but right. And that down the stretch of a game, Jimmy Butler might have the ball and it might not be you. Mm-hmm. What are you going to be doing on that play to help us win that play, offensively or defensively? And if I come away from that conversation not feeling like he's got an understanding that that's really important, I may side with you a little bit more in that respect. But he's still really good, Anthony. Like, that guy can score the crap out of the ball in isolation settings, and that matters a lot in the playoffs. He was drawing double teams from us, whether it's traps on the perimeter, all of that, that matters. You got a guy who can compromise a defense. Like, for all of his faults, James Harden's really, really, really good. And I feel like we can kind of outthink ourselves sometimes on these things.
I'm actually going to go further. If I was a contender, I would probably avoid it. Just because if you're a contender, like if you're a title contender, it's because you have a culture and everybody is bought in right now. And I'm not positive that Harden is going to buy in unless he buys in for a little bit just to show everybody that look, I have been the in the right on this one, you know, which happens. Like that was one of my, I mean, it didn't wind up happening with Puig, but I remember when Yasiel Puig was traded, I was like, oh man, if he ever matures and he ever like really buys into the things that you need to do to be a winning baseball player, then the trade that the Dodgers made in getting rid of him is always going to look really stupid. It didn't turn out that way. And Puig is hoping to be, you know, get back into the major leagues this next year. And I'm not saying that I think Harden will be on the outside looking in at the NBA. He's way too talented individually for that to be the case. But what I will say though is, I think the team that trades for him is going to be one of those kind of middling teams. They're going to have him under contract for 2-3 years and probably for 2 years, maybe even one, you know, before he demands out again. But if you're a team whose books look kind of ugly and the price to acquire Harden gets to a point where you are now in a conversation you didn't think that you were going to be able to take part in, like in Orlando or, you know, somebody like that, the Knicks, right? If I were running that team and I just have a quick second to hit a restart button and also have a player as talented as James Harden for even if it's 1 year, that's the situation that I would probably go with.
What if Harden doesn't want to be there?
He's under contract, you know.
Okay. You're willing to trade for an unhappy James to be there, James Harden.
If my books are ugly enough, like the Knicks, for example, they have like 37 power. I guess they cleaned up their books this year, but
yeah,
like
they don't have cap. Yeah.
If this was a problem last year, right? And the Knicks, and you know, if Harden made it known that he wanted out of Houston last year, and the Knicks had the books the way that they looked last year, and even if I wasn't on that list that Harden would prefer to go to, you're going to turn all of that amount of money into James Harden. And if he leaves, your books are reset. You know,
let me ask you this. How do you look at him if you're Boston?
I
mean, we always like to tease, right? Lord knows no one likes this more than me about how nobody wants to go. None of the top guys want to go to where you're at. They've got a couple of guys under big deals. Like, they don't have cap flexibility.
Yeah.
They've been kind of in the same place, that second round conference finalist type of team for 3-4 years now. Do you take a swing at that?
I think the move would have been to sign and trade, like the Gordon Hayward sign and trade, If Horton showed any interest in going to, I guess that would have been impossible to write because Houston's books wouldn't have let him.
Yeah, I don't think the signing. Yeah, they would have had to. It would have hard capped them too. Yeah, I don't think that would have worked.
So
yeah.
I mean, Boston has a culture right now, like on their roster, not just like the Danny Ainge shitty GM culture. I'm talking about like on their roster. Sure.
No, they're a good team. That's part of why it's fun to
where it appears them. That. Well, but also it appears that for the most part, those guys are bought in. But like if you mm-hmm. if Boston could unload Kemba, and again, like that's just shitty what Ainge would be doing to Kemba there. But if they could unload Kemba and bring in Harden for basically Kemba and some future picks, and they have like 37 still, I would imagine. I'd do it. I'd probably do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Also, like part of me is like, do it because I just want to watch how badly things can go because it's Boston. But I think, you know, at what point do they have to see like, all right, is Tatum definitely a bona fide star right now, a superstar? Will Jason Tatum ever be as good individually as James Harden is right now? I don't know. You know, he's got
to
show.
I don't think they'd have to trade Tatum to.
I'm saying, like for Tatum, can Tatum be the best player on a championship team? I think so, but it also really depends on how good the second best player is. And
right.
If you bring in Harden, he's now your best player. And do you want Tatum playing second fiddle to somebody like James Harden? I think maybe I do.
I think the answer with Tatum is not yet. Right. But he could get there. But Harden is already what he's going to be. And if it's like, to me, that's a 1A, 1B situation, because I don't think right now either player can be the best player on a championship team. But mm-hmm. if you got two of those guys, like, does that combine into close enough to what you need? I don't know. I think that's an interesting idea. And if I was in their shoes, he's under contract. I'd like, yeah. Like you said, he's under contract for a couple of years. I don't know.
I'm going to hop on the trade machine and see if I can make this work. See if I could just light Twitter on fire.
It would be high drama too, because right, the star who doesn't necessarily want to be there.
Yeah,
Ainge the would have team. To, like,
yeah,
dealing Kemba like after a year after he signed in free agency, like cold-blooded. It would be.
Could crater them. It could work out really well.
And right. It could exactly.
Harden, you know, buys in and he works with Tatum and he works with like Jaylen Brown is a really good player to make up for a lot of the things that are wrong with Harden's game.
Yeah,
defensively, especially, it could work. You know, I still think
Celtics fans center, get to shove it in everyone's faces that we did finally trade for that star and it did get us over the hump. I feel very good for them. So yeah,
I just can't believe that he listed all of those Eastern contenders and the Celtics were nowhere to be seen.
Oh, I wasn't surprised.
It's the kind of joke that we wouldn't even write because it's just too on the nose, but here it is. It's just staring at us right there on the nose. It's incredible.
This is my favorite. Celtics trolling is my favorite trolling because of how much truth there is in it. Like
yeah.
I put a little extra hot sauce on it for sure to get them riled up. Oh, you should see him. It's so fun.
Oh man. I spend a lot of time in your mentions. Like I don't reply or anything like that, but I spend a lot of time in the mentions. Domin had a good tweet today that.
Yeah. They're really riled up.
Yeah.
They spent several years telling everybody how smart everyone, like Danny Ainge is the smartest. Brad Stevens versus Giannis. Like that was a thing, you know, like, and so yes, your enemies are going to delight in
how
when we win a championship too. Yeah. And just like, they were so smug about it. Oh, mm-hmm. It feels so good. Sorry, this went in a totally different direction. No, I may need therapy for my Celtics feelings.
No, never get therapy.
This is like, my therapy for my Celtics feelings.
This is there like, you know, this is something that's a tool. Like your need for therapy on it is a tool for the show. So never fix yourself, Pete.
I'm glad to be emotionally traumatized for your benefit, Anthony. That's the Locked On Lakers model.
Exactly. All right. That's going to do it for this episode and this week's episodes of the Locked On Lakers podcast. Pete, next time you and I talk, the Lakers will have played what? One or two games?
Two games. Yeah.
Two games.
Friday and Sunday.
Yeah. So, so we'll have that to go over Sunday show. I'll give a brief recap of what we saw from, you know, tonight's show and then Sunday, and then also answer your guys' questions. And then Pete will be there to talk to you guys for Tuesday's show to further get ready for a season that is upon us, whether or not we're ready. The season doesn't care. It's here. We got to get ready for it.
I'm going to go DM Kuz some clips in preparation because I'm the only person who can now. What in the world?
Have a great rest of your day. Make some else's. We'll talk to you.